Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Yes, we are getting started here today. Welcome, everyone. This is Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our regular co-host, Dr. Christina Chambreau, doctor of veterinary medicine. And today is May 24th, 2012. Everyone seems to be getting ready for Memorial Day weekend. And this is a continuing series. We speak with Dr. Chambreau. You may call in with your questions about your animals. You may send messages and comment directly on the live chat, which we have open today. I believe we're going to be talking about pet behavior, and I have two short quotes to get us started. One is by Stephen Baker. He says, "Dogs travel hundreds of miles during their lifetime, responding to such commands as come and fetch." And this reminds me of people running up and down stairs all day. Really, we put on our miles too if we run around the house getting errands done. Also, there's another really lovely quote that says, "My most satisfying aspect of animal training is a very simple moment. After a show, when I leave the stage door and there is a crowd gathered, sometimes I hear someone say the following, and it makes it all worthwhile. Quote, how did they make that dog do that? Unquote. I smile because I am the only they, and I do it with love." And that was spoken by William Berlone. He's a dog trainer when he was talking about transforming a severely abused dog from the pound into Sandy in the Broadway production of Annie. So this gives us hope that when we find animals and pets or bring them into our home from the pound, that we can change their lives tremendously. And so we can get started, and I guess at the end of the show we'll give some more information about contacting you, Christina, and also about how people can share this information with others.
Absolutely. And I'll start off first by just saying you can contact me easily at my website, Healthy Animals, or My Healthy Animals, or email me at healthyanimals@aol.com. And there's a wonderful course that's coming up the last 2 weeks in June. But if we don't have enough people signed up for it by this Monday, they're going to have to cancel. And it's a class that has homeopathy, intro to holistic, intro to homeopathy, intermediate homeopathy. You'll actually learn how to use a repertory, a materia medica, or if you know how to use it, you'll learn how to interpret it and do it differently for animals. And we have traditional Chinese medicine, intro and intermediate. We have nutrition. We have two Reiki classes, Reiki 1 and Reiki 2. So it's really, it'd be a shame to have it not happen. So I hope people listening, I've had people fly to this class from as far as Israel, Hong Kong, and Japan. So,
wow.
It's been offered for many years. It followed the Cefels, who run the Prince George's Feral Friends, were devastated when the National Center of Homeopathy canceled their summer school, and they put this in place to replace the animal part of the NCH summer school. So
I see.
Yep, would really love to have it work. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But definitely get hold of me for that.
Okay.
And,
people go to www.myhealthyanimals.com.
Yep.
Okay. Very good. And we will get the word out. Tell people to put it on Twitter, put it on your Facebook pages, put it on LinkedIn, wherever you can. Let folks know, because we want to keep this program going for Christina.
Absolutely. And not just for me. There are multiple. We have 5 different instructors that are teaching for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. Sort of easy to remember their website. It's Holistic Health Care for Pets, all spelled out.
.org.
Holistic Healthcare F-O-R Pets.org.
Okay.
That's excellent. And actually, it was because of when we did have a lot of people taking those classes, there was a big request at one point for homeopathy to treat behavior. And so I did an intro and an intermediate day on, or intro and advanced day on treating behavior problems with homeopathy. And while I've been treating behavior problems ever since I started with homeopathy, in preparing for this class, I actually listened to watched Cesar Millan's videos, and I did some extra reading, and I discovered Deborah Wood's series of books on animal behavior, and hers are the Tao, spelled T-A-O, and she has a mini series of a lot of books in the series. So there's The Tao of Bow Wow, The Tao of Meow, The Tao of Small Dogs, The Tao of Large Dogs.
That sounds like fun. She has a sense of humor.
And it's wonderful. It really is written from a totally Buddhist perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it is probably one of the best series of books I know about really connecting with your cats and dogs and understanding how they think. So it was the PGFF summer school that got me actually being able to teach what I'm going to teach in these next 2 or 3 weeks.
And so, do you want to just tell us, was there anything in the last classes you did in May that you want to relate to the folks here? Anything special?
From the Academy of Veterinary, the talk we did 2 weeks ago on Was There More?
I'm just thinking if you did any other. Oh, you have 2 classes coming up, June 2nd?
Right, June 2nd and 3rd. That may or may not be happening. But
okay, and then you have June 16th through 22.
Right, that's the main one.
Okay.
And it's not just for my part of it, but it's for the acupuncture and nutrition and all the other parts as well. Everything has to get filled or he can't do it. Unless, of course, we had 100 people show up for the homeopathy and then he'd be able to do it. Even though the others didn't fill.
That sounds like a good vision that we can.
It is. So, behavior.
Yeah.
Behavior problems are probably one of the most challenging things for people because if animals don't fit our lifestyle, we often get resentful and. Many animals, probably the major reason for animals being turned into the Humane Society and to shelters and to be abandoned is because they don't fit with our lifestyle, that they have behavior problems, that they may be a behavior problem not for them, but simply a behavior problem for the people who they're living with. So it's not abnormal for dogs to bark, and even to bark a lot. Coyotes will often spend hours out there barking. Wolves will often howl or bark.
What are they doing? Is there different reasons, obviously, I would think?
Multiple different reasons for doing it. But some of it is just because they seem to enjoy doing it. It's like
just
they're
singing.
Talking.
They're singing.
Or singing. Yes, absolutely.
Or talking to each other.
However, that normal behavior doesn't work if you live in a congested neighborhood or in an apartment and you don't have a control of that. So there are many behaviors, and Dr. Pitcairn speaks about this a lot, that he actually did a talk on this, there are many behaviors of our animals that are normal in the wild, but we're not letting them do that in our house. Or we haven't learned yet some of the things we could let them do that would be more normal. So with homeopathy, you know, the goal of homeopathy is to rebalance the energy field so that the imbalances in the energy field that are causing symptoms are no longer there. And then the vital force no longer causes symptoms. Therefore, we have to make a distinction between that which is an illness for the vital force or something else. And Hahnemann addressed this a little bit with obstacles to cure. He said, if you are eating a poor diet, living in a bad environment, that has to be fixed before we even see if there's anything that needs to be treated homeopathically. And that's the same thing with our dogs and cats. If you have a dog who's barking or a cat who's scratching the couch to pieces, is that a homeopath? Does that animal need homeopathic care? Or do the owners, do the guardians need to be doing some training?
Just basic care.
Exactly.
Like Maslow's basic needs.
So it's a distinction that a lot of people jump to homeopathy without making this distinction. They have a dog who barks a lot, and they go to the repertory and they look up loquacious and they give the dog Lachesis and then say homeopathy doesn't work because the dog didn't stop barking.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, you'd never give remedies for a specific condition. But number two, why is the dog barking and why is the dog continuing to bark? Actually, a good story to start this with is I was at a homeopathic NCH conference many, many years ago, 10 or 15 years ago, and there was a married couple who were speaking or, you know, active homeopaths, excellent homeopaths, had a practice, had a very busy practice, actually, and I can't even remember who they were. And they said, would you mind if we asked you a question about our cat? We've got a big behavior problem with our cats. And, you know, want to see what remedy you might suggest. And I said, certainly, no problem. So we sat down to talk, and their complaint was that they had two cats, and the cats basically ignored them and just treated the two people like feeding machines. And they were happy to take food from them, and happy, you know, if they happened to be petted. But mostly they totally ignored the people. And so they put out a couple of rubrics that they thought might fit. But, of course, I always take the whole case. And so my first question was, well, tell me more about this. Tell me about your lifestyle. Tell me about how you interact with the cats and how you play with them. And they go, oh, we play with them. We do this. And they listed a whole bunch of different toys. And then I asked how often they do that. And they said, well, every Sunday. And I said, what about the rest of the week? And they said, oh, we leave at 5 o'clock in the morning and we get back at 11 o'clock at night. Is there any wonder that those two cats ignored them and played with just themselves? They never saw the people. So, of course, they wouldn't interact with them. So there was not a problem with the vital force that needed fixing. What mm-hmm. needed fixing instead was how the two of them, you know, there wasn't anything to fix. They just had to accept their cats were going to have a great life enjoying themselves and not interact with the people very much.
Well, it sounds to me, it's obviously a relationship issue, but it sounds to me like the people know or thought that cats are independent, they can take care of themselves, and that's why they chose them as a pet for themselves rather than getting a dog, which needs a lot of interaction. You have to go out and walk it. They don't have a litter box in the house typically. And when they chose the cats, they got what they asked for. And
well,
you know,
no, cats are very affectionate, and you can have them greet you. Many of them greet you at the door. However, it was the circumstances they created. It wasn't cat,
right,
per se. It was what they set up. I mean, it would be it may have even been the same with the dog had they left at 6 in the morning and come back at 11 at night and had a pet sitter come twice a day to take care of the dog. The dog
True.
Might have fairly ignored them as well.
Right. They didn't build a relationship.
They weren't home to build a relationship, yes.
Right, right.
So there wasn't any – the key important piece here is that here were leading homeopaths that were thinking about a remedy where mm-hmm. There was nothing to be fixed. These were very healthy cats acting totally normally given
right.
the circumstances in which they were. So that's the most important part of doing behavior work with homeopathy. When I teach my classes, one of the things I talk about in terms of healthy animals, how do you know if an animal's healthy or not, the early warning signs of illness. And when we talk about the behavior part of it, imagine me walking in a circle. One of these days we'll get video on this, and I'll get video, and we can have me doing dancing around.
Okay,
so
we will have you.
Imagine me walking in a circle. Inside the circle is normal behavior. And you could have an animal that is timid and totally healthy. Timidity, there are perfectly healthy people out there that are timid.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a horse that occasionally shies at something. You could have a fearful animal, slightly fearful animal, a cat who, you know, when strangers come in the house, goes and hides, but comes out pretty soon thereafter. You know, as soon as the people leave or even while they're there, the cat comes out. That's perfectly healthy. You can even have sort of crabby, irritable animals that, you know, you just learn. My cat, for instance, if I am using an inappropriate grooming tool on his back end, on the back of him, like the flea comb, he's not mm-hmm. particularly happy with me doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And he will actually claw me, just not viciously or anything, but he'll reach out with his claws out and claw me.
Right, he's
so
talking
I've had
to you.
I've had people come to me saying, my cat claws me, what can mm-hmm. we do homeopathically? And
mm-hmm.
when I talk to them, maybe they play with their cats with their hands and play aggressive type games with their cat. Maybe,
mm-hmm.
like me, they're doing something that they know their cat doesn't like, and they're doing it anyway for one reason or another, and they... So the cat is behaving perfectly appropriately. So it's a matter, again, of training the owner, not giving a homeopathic remedy to the cat.
Right. So if anyone is thinking that homeopathy is the be-all and end-all, the answer to solve all your questions and problems, that's not true. But you really have to check in with yourself. What are you doing that's appropriate or inappropriate to another? Is that creating a block or a barrier? Is it creating? Are you being annoying, and the animal
mm-hmm.
is simply responding to that type, to the type of behavior that you are having? So you might be having to train yourself in terms of behavior, and then as you said, all of the basic needs are basic needs being met. That there is a warm, comfortable place for the animal to live, that they're getting enough food, that they're getting enough playful stimulation. I know horses, if they are locked in a little barn, they're not going to be able to be too happy.
Right. So let's go back. So also healthy are animals that are very affectionate and outgoing. Those are sort of what we expect from an animal. But that's not the only normal, but that's also normal. And then we have animals that are pretty independent, and they, you know, they'll take us or leave us, they'll greet us and then go off on their own. And that's also perfectly normal. So these variations in behavior can be completely normal. Now, we also know when some of them are an illness. So if you have a dog that every time he sees another person, another dog, even you, even or maybe some other members of your family, and or small animals like mice or rabbits or something like that. If he aggressively goes to kill these animals or these people every time he sees them, clearly that is an imbalance in the vital force. Training could certainly be a part of that, but it's so extreme that you know it's not just training. Something else is going on. When you have a horse that only expert people can ride because he shies all the time, because he's so fearful, that's clearly an imbalance in the vital force. Even when you have animals that are super, 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 super friendly, that just won't leave you alone, that follow you everywhere, these are animals that are ill.
That so are, you're talking about extreme behaviors, not like what you gave an example earlier, that the cat or the dog is shy at first until they're accustomed to the stranger, and then they'll come in and they'll interact. But this is where it remains in a state of being fearful or shy, where they're not
right.
able to
Right, it may not
be...
come out from under the bed for 5 days after the house is cleaned.
Right, so they're stuck somewhere.
Exactly. Their energy field, their vital force, has an illness, is imbalanced, so that even the least little trigger sets them off, and sets them off in a large way.
Well, we think of that in terms of, let's say, an abused animal that has been hit and then they're hand shy. So in this case, do you retrain just with behavior that you do?
Well, you have to take the whole case and see. And it's a matter, so if you, a lot of people blame their animal's behavior, even when they're 10 years old, on the fact that they were abandoned by their mother when they were 2 weeks old, that they were abused when they were young, that they had a bad nutritional start. That's not true. Whatever happens to them when they're young, with 6 months to a year in a loving home, all of those behaviors should go away. Anything that's remaining is clearly vital force imbalance. So if you have a horse or a dog or a cat who's hand shy, you would want to say, well, how long have I owned the animal? How hand shy is it? What other things are going on? And maybe flower essences would be the thing to do initially, because that may be enough. There may not be a vital force imbalance. It may be more the gentle emotional support of flower essences will take care of the problem. So it's the degree to which there's a problem. Now, there's a big middle area, too. Well, is my dog too aggressive? Is my cat too fearful? And all of those have to just be taken in the context with the rest of the case.
Mm-hmm.
So we see some that do get better just by themselves, and others we're treating maybe for a skin condition, and the fearfulness goes away. Then we know we've made a deep impact on the vital force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the challenges that we face as homeopaths is often when animals are ill, not always, but frequently, animals who are ill seem to want more attention. So slightly chronically ill animals may be be more on the clingy, the ill spectrum of being too affectionate.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when I cure them of their disease, their behavior reverts to what is healthy for them, which may be crabby or independent. And then people go, wait a minute, I want my sick cat back. Because
I don't think crabby doesn't sound like a good thing.
Oh,
independent is one thing. Okay, so they're able to get around and do their thing. But crabby, I don't know. What do you say about?
Well, have you ever known a person? Have you ever had people in your life that were perfectly healthy, had no problems, but they were a little on the crabby side? You know, rather than going, oh, hi, Debbie. How are you doing today? Are you doing wonderfully? Are you having a good time? Instead, they go, "Hi, Debbie, what do you need to do today?"
Yeah, well, I don't call that crabby. I mean, everybody has their personality, and
exactly.
I know some people like to joke around, and you know, that's not like my favorite thing in the whole world, but they're
mm-hmm.
always joking. And
mm-hmm.
and that it could be a combination of hiding some sort of a problem with them, or it could be just their personality. They're having
right.
a good time. They're having fun.
Yep.
I don't know
and
how
that's,
to
and that's,
that other
but
question.
Sometimes it depends on your perception, but that could be perceived as crabby.
Okay.
So if an animal is a little dictatorial and when you're getting the food out, yells at you,
yeah.
some people would want that to be fixed. And
they're
may be just a very normal behavior.
Okay.
There may not be anything wrong with it.
The animal may be trying to train you.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Get that food on my plate. Okay.
And then there's a whole other chunk that I mentioned before about, is it instinct that just hasn't been domesticated enough? Or is it really a vital force imbalance? Is it really an illness that needs to be treated? So aggressive behavior may be very normal. It's part of defending themselves. So you have to make a distinction between why are they being aggressive and what circumstances are they being aggressive, and then see if it's a training issue. Urinating out of the box could be a normal thing.
Really? Let's not get that pet. So what,
just work at training with that.
You can train them to
sure.
to do it in the box.
Sure.
Okay,
absolutely.
So maybe what would be like a little techniques to do that?
Well, you know, most cats you don't have to, but if you it's a matter of first finding a substrate they like, a litter that they like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to often restrict them to a small area to make sure they're using the box, because when they're in a small area, they're more likely to use it. And then you have to put the box wherever they wanted to be urinating and slowly move it to where you want the box to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I
and,
know they have...
And then and, other, and, other yeah. things are like yowling at night when
yeah.
they're alone, or... some degree of separation anxiety
right.
may be instinctive behaviors, but they also, and again, this is that gradation, is it normal or is it abnormal? Any inflammation of the brain could take something that's a instinctive behavior and make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to use homeopathy to actually cure the problem.
You need to explain that a little further, this inflammation of the brain thing, and then...
Well, if the any time, basically, if we go back to one of my earlier talks, the body is pretty limited in how it responds. So when something impinges on you or your animals to make them ill, first there's an energetic imbalance. That's the time where, I know, I'm just not quite right. But if you ask me to tell you why, I couldn't say. I'm eating okay. I'm getting my work done. I'm happy. But there's just something wrong. I know something's not quite right. And anytime I ask a group of people, I just did a talk for a kennel club two nights ago, and I said, how many of you just have that sense sometimes that your animal's not right? But if you had to tell the vet, you wouldn't really have anything to say. And I'd say 3/4 of the room raised their hand. So that's the energetic imbalance. If that continues, it becomes a functional imbalance. And a functional imbalance is often behavior problems, mild behavior problems. It's scratching, but the skin's okay. Peeing frequently, but the urinalysis is normal. If that's left untreated, then the body, the only way the vital force can start to heal itself is by causing inflammation. And inflammation is heat, pain, redness, swelling, and lack of function. It's some combination of those, not all of them necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And once there, so inflammation happens as just the normal process of the vital force trying to rebalance itself. If the inflammation is allowed to go on for too long, then you actually get tissue changes, like a thickened bladder wall, bladder stones, black skin, thickened skin, kidneys not working, brain not working right. So it's so going through those levels. So the
right. so,
inflammation
so
of the brain that Dr. Pitcairn's talking about is that in this animal, it's not something you would measure on an EKG or anything like that, but in this animal, as the energy field, the vital force is trying to rebalance itself, the area that it's out of balance in is in the brain. And so first it's energetically out of balance, and then it's functionally out of balance, but then it actually causes inflammation. And the inflammation then causes worse behaviors, that exaggerates the behaviors.
Okay,
and
so
needs treatment with homeopathy or Chinese medicine to fix it.
Mm-hmm. For some reason, our sound is not so perfect right now. It started off really well. I don't know whether we've changed the way we're holding our headphones or anything.
Nope.
Okay, so I guess the reason I asked you why you said inflammation of the brain,
right.
Now I understand that the neurological damage or the neurological inflammation is what's changing the behavior. Whereas
right.
if it was a different organ of the body, an inflamed limb, well, maybe yes, that might also cause a change in behavior, but definitely from the brain.
Right.
As the source.
Yes.
So okay.
that's just one of the many possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, it certainly can be other sources as well.
Okay.
Now, in as we've talked a little bit in the past, and we probably should do more on this, but homeopaths are familiar with the three basic miasms that Hahnemann talked about, the soric, psychotic, and syphilitic miasms. And Hahnemann speaks of emotional disease as being one-sided and usually soric. And Pitcairn underlined that and thought he felt that most emotional disease in our dogs and cats and horses is mostly soric. I disagree. I really feel that all three miasms can be seen in emotional disease. And Dr. Hinneman, who's excellent with horses, definitely sees that. The soric miasm, for instance, in horses would be nervousness, ADHD-like behavior, compulsive things like weaving, fearfulness. But the psychosis would be horses that are aggressive, that try to run away, trying to run away is soric. Psychosis would be the more the aggressive flaring up behaviors. Even if there's fearfulness, their fear is like terror immediately instead of just general fearfulness. The syphilitic one are ones that are really sneaky, manipulative, horses that will let you come up to groom them and then turn around and bite you hard. And so that can help us in choosing the homeopathic remedy. And there are many charts in different books that list the different emotional states and match them up to the sora, psychosis, or syphilitic miasm. So that's another way to start looking at what remedies do we want to give.
It gives you a category to start with as to knowing if you've chosen a good remedy.
It helps not to know if you've chosen a good remedy, but to help you choose the best remedy. It's like one more rubric that you can look at.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it makes you think of a certain group of remedies. Most remedies overlap these. But it also gives you an idea of how severe this is. Because if it's a syphilitic miasm, it's a more of a problem to treat, and you're going to have to be more careful with this animal. And so maybe you'll want to go with some lower potencies and maybe LM potencies. So it also helps you choose your frequency of repetition and your potency.
Maybe you want to explain a little bit why you have to be more careful when an animal has gone into the syphilitic type of a miasm.
Well, here you have an animal that will bite without provocation, that will bite with no indication it's going to bite.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be more careful around that animal.
Okay.
And if you give a remedy and it's the wrong remedy and it stirs up the vital force, you often get more aggravation of symptoms. So here you'll have an animal who is more likely to bite if you've given the wrong remedy at a higher potency.
Mm-hmm.
So even though usually emotional states are treated with higher potencies, you may need to start more gently to see if you've got the right remedy and slowly progress up.
That's why I recommend going to a professional.
Well, if you have a severe problem, it's important to go to a professional. And, of course, but we're talking on this show, some of the people listening actually are good homeopaths, and they've done a lot of studying. And so they can you know, definitely treat because they understand how we need to be looking at all parts, and we need to look at what causes the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's right. If we have healthcare providers who are listening to the show, then they are able to utilize this information. For those people who are newcomers to homeopathy, they should definitely either take your class,
right,
or
go to a professional.
Go to a professional. Yes. Okay.
That's right. And one of the reasons that I feel that a lot of behavior problems are psychotic related to that miasm is so often I see behavior problems after vaccination, particularly aggression after vaccination, although I can see other problems as well. But vaccines is a big trigger for behavior mm-hmm. problems. So it's just a reminder again, legally, you only need to do the rabies every 3 years. No other vaccines mm-hmm. need to be given. Many people choose to do them to their puppies and kittens, but that's fine, but don't continue to repeat them every year or even every 3 years. The viral vaccines are good for life. The other vaccines are basically not that useful, not that good. So it's just a reminder to be careful when you're vaccinating and only vaccinate healthy animals. So if there's a behavioral issue going on, that animal is not healthy and should not even get the rabies vaccine.
And we can consider the fact that most often vaccinations contain some type of a heavy metal, and it corroborates that when you put these types of ingredients or toxins, neurological toxins, into the body, it's going to affect the brain. And there you go to the circle, right back to inflammation of the brain.
Right.
From the vaccination, and therefore you're going to see that aggressive behavior come out. And you can tie the pieces together, but only you're making the connection. So think
about
it.
And it's not just metals in the vaccine. There are other adjuvants as well. There are other chemicals that they can be sensitive to.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And metabolic issues can cause, as a secondary problem, maybe from inflammation of the brain, but they can actually cause behavior problems. So Gene Dodds particularly says if you have sudden aggression, that low thyroid could be a cause of that. And so she definitely recommends any aggressive animals be checked for their thyroid levels.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're
Dr.
there?
Tapp, back okay. in 2003 at the Veterinary Homeopathy Conference, really showed how a lot of serious illnesses like diabetes, cancer, or behavior resolve easier and quicker when the animal and the owner are both treated with homeopathic remedies, because often their states are tied in together.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And very often I have been to conferences where behavioral clinical psychologist and talk about the animal, the pet, reflecting the disease of the owner.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Well, what
so
other...
It's something that any psychologist should be asking about, pets in the house and how the pets behave.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Vice versa. I have to ask about the other people in the house. For instance, I was treating a small Lhasa. She came to me because she lived in a group house, and a bunch of acupuncture students were living together, and this dog was nipping the heels of the people in the house pretty aggressively, as well as her own ankles. And one of the things I had to look at was, is the behavior of this dog because of how the dog's being treated by the other people in the house? Were they being nasty to the dog, causing him to be nasty to them? So
mm-hmm.
we had to explore back, how was the dog in other homes? How was the dog when he first got there? That type of thing. Turned out that as we looked at things, every time the dog was vaccinated for rabies, he became much worse. He, like, escalated another level. So in this case, it wasn't the people in the house. It was the rabies vaccine. And Listen was curative for this dog. I think Lachesis and then Listen was what I used.
Mm-hmm. So it's what's being put into the dog's body, for one thing, what type of food they're eating, what type of environment they have, who are the people in the family, and how do they interact. So the people in the family can learn a lot about themselves by observing the behavior of their pet.
That's absolutely true. Very,
mm-hmm.
very true. Now, Dr. D. Blanco is a homeopathic veterinarian in New Mexico. And a few years ago, probably 10 years ago, I was talking with her. And she was really good about tracking her success rates. And she said that using homeopathy to treat plus other things, supplements, good food, making sure the people were doing what they needed to do, that type of thing. She had 25% success treating cat elimination problems, 80% success with aggressive dogs, 50% with aggressive cats, only 10% with fear of thunderstorms. She had better luck with acupuncture and an herbal blend for thunderstorms. Fear, hiding, and timidity, 80% success. ADD type of behaviors, compulsive behaviors, 80% type of success. And she said that even when she's found the correct remedy, it usually takes a full year before the cat or dog has been deeply helped. So it's a very slow progression. They take a few months. In 2 or 3 months, they're like definitely better. And in 6 months, they're maybe 50 to 70% better, but it takes a whole year for them to completely resolve. Now, my experience is different. My experience in many behavior cases is when I finally find the right remedy, they can be better almost within a couple of weeks. I had an incredible cat, and I'll finish up today with this case, and then next week we're going to actually look at the remedies for behavior problems. So this wonderful, wonderful animal guardian called me, and she was the editor and owner of Wolf Clan magazine, Wolf Clan magazine. She was a pet sitter. She had multiple cats, a dog, a hedgehog, a parrot in her small apartment, and just really great in terms of doing the behavior. She did taught behavior classes, training classes, and she had a cat that they called the cat from hell. When anybody would open the door to come into her apartment, if she wasn't paying attention or they weren't paying attention, this cat would leap on the people's chest and hiss in their face and be very aggressive. Didn't bite, but was very aggressive. When she was making the raw food in the morning, the cat would sit on the counter and swat at her with his hand and yowl at her. He opened the refrigerator door. Believe it or not, a cat could open the refrigerator door. So she had to keep a padlock, a hasp on it. I mean, it didn't have to be locked, but it, you know, she had to actually have something high enough he couldn't reach. He would also open all the cupboard doors, and he would let all the other animals in to eat the food. He wasn't necessarily hungry. He was just doing it out of, like, nastiness or mischievousness. The other animals, when he sat in the middle of a room, they would slink along the wall to stay away from them, and they totally ignored him. There was no fun play. There was no grooming play. This was a really aggressive cat. Now, he didn't lash out at the other animals. He didn't attack them the way you would expect maybe Belladonna Stramonium to do. Instead, he just was, I am who I am, and you behave yourself. Just stay away from me. I'm irritable. So it was more this profound irritability and even some dictatorialness. I started with Nux Vomica 200C. Didn't see any change. So then maybe it was even 1M. Then the next month, we went over the next few months, once a month, we changed remedies. And I went through Stramonium and Belladonna and Lachesis. And I'm not sure all the remedies. After about 6 months, she said, you know, I'm going to have to get rid of him. He needs to go to a home where he's the only cat. And I said, you know, I just still think he's Nux Vomica. Are you willing to give it one more month? And she said, yep, I'll give it another month. So we went up to either 10M or 50M of Nux Vomica. And shortly thereafter, my daughter and I were visiting her city for a conference, and she picked us up at the airport. We went to her apartment. My little daughter of 5 years of age, very slight build, walks in, and this cat runs out from the kitchen and dances on his hind legs around her, asking for petting. And this was the cat from hell. And Tracy said, this is the nicest cat I've ever seen.
Mm. So what's the lesson we learned from this?
The lesson we learned from this is that within a few weeks, if you get the right remedy and the right potency, you can take an animal that's incorrigibly aggressive and turn them into the nicest cat she's ever seen.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm asking is not everybody has 10M, 50M of a remedy handy. How do we know that we need to continue to pursue that same remedy up into that high potency level?
Well, that would go back to the talk we did on evaluating the result. And when you're evaluating the result, if you see some improvement in symptoms, then you go up in potency to get it to hold. Now, in this case, this took a professional homeopath, me, to say, you know, we've been doing 1M, and it hasn't touched this case, and there's no pathology. And often, for emotional states, you do need higher potencies. So if we get the right remedy, the higher the potency, the more you need to have the correct remedy to have any effect. So clearly, we need a higher potency for this case. And probably it was remiss of me to not go to higher potencies earlier.
Well, I don't know. From my understanding, there should have been some slight improvement to even give you a hint that you were on the right trail.
There should have been. But again, when I retook the case, mm-hmm. it came up so clearly, Nux Vomica, I said, we've mm-hmm. just got to try it again.
Okay.
There are times when you just have to have the correct potency.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well,
that is an important lesson. It's one of the challenges of homeopathy.
It is. It sounds like a big challenge because it requires the homeopath to have an extreme amount of confidence in their understanding of the patient and the remedy, and that they took a good case and repertorized it, and this was the number one thing. And after trying it at whatever, 630, mm-hmm. 200, 1M, nothing, that you had to go even higher, that takes a lot of confidence on the part of the professional homeopath.
Not really, because it's more, it really isn't. It's more, you take the case, And if there's no risk to health, it's when there's a risk to health that you have to be so careful, when there's kidney disease, liver disease. When it's skin disease or behavioral problems, other than aggression, I mean, this was aggression, but I knew the owner could cope with it if there was an exacerbation. Plus, I had 3 months or 4 months of no exacerbation. So I knew we weren't touching this cat. The remedies just weren't high enough potency because we weren't seeing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you know you have to go higher. If you're giving 6C to a cat that's having a bladder infection, and the bladder, and you don't see any results, and you take the case again, and you go, wow, I wonder why I'm not seeing any results. And you go, well, this is a young cat. It's sort of an acute flaring up disease. While if I have exactly the right remedy, any potency should work. It's probably not exactly the right remedy. So I think I'm going to go up in potency and let's see what happens. That's a perfectly reasonable, it's part of what Hahnemann says, and it's perfectly reasonable to try a higher potency if you have either only a little response or even when you have no response and you retake the case and still come up with the same remedy.
I guess another lesson that I'm learning is if it is an emotional behavioral issue, then it's worthwhile to try that 10M, 50M potency.
Right.
Okay.
If you've tried earlier ones, smaller, lower ones, and they haven't caused exacerbations,
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying to start up there. The gutsy and the you have to be a well-trained professional is when you start up there.
Do you feel that these emotional cases, strictly emotional behavioral cases, are hiding some or preventing some physical symptoms so that, let's say, although you're telling us the story about the cat that was cured of this aggression
mm-hmm.
and did not then come out with some other type of a physical problem like a kidney problem
mm-hmm.
or anything, is that typical?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not as good at maybe following my cases, but I generally don't see a lot of other symptoms getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
I generally don't see that if there's an emotional problem and you treat it, that then you're going to develop a physical problem.
Okay.
I wouldn't say I usually see that.
That's good to know. Okay, so...
Next week, we're going to do remedy. We'll actually look at some of the remedies that can be that are often used. I mean, any remedy can be used for sure, but we'll look mm-hmm. at a few of the remedies and some of the rubrics. How do you think about it? How do you choose it?
Okay, that sounds great. And so, if you wish, you can hang on here, and I will close up the show. I'm going to talk about upcoming shows. We're going to have the very next show that we're going to do is going to be a special rebroadcast of a talk with Meryl Dorey. She's the founder and president of the Australian Vaccination Network, and we did a recording with her. So we're going to broadcast that following this show today. In lieu of our regular vaccinations and your rights in the United States with Alan Phillips. Then on Monday, we're going to be talking about whooping cough with Dr. Tony Bark, and that will be on the Health In Show, which is a live video. So one of these days, we will do a live video show together, and we can see you dancing around in circles.
Right, right, absolutely.
And then on next Monday, the 28th, I believe we're going to do one more show with Grant Bentley and facial analysis. And Dr. Adil has been on vacation lately, so I think he's not coming back until June. So that'll be in another 2 weeks. Now, this would be of interest to you. We have been talking about the rubrics in the chest a section of Kent's repertory, going item by item, and we in 3 weeks we have only gotten to page two.
Right. That's definitely, there are lots of rubrics.
Lots of rubrics and lots of real life stories, and his explanations are so thorough and enlightening. So he's a wealth of knowledge, and those shows are fantastic. What I did yesterday in lieu of his show was I read the preface and editorial introduction to Kent's repertory, which I thought hardly any people would actually read that part of the book.
But that's one of the required things in my classes.
Well,
I always have people read that section.
Quite enlightening, because Kent himself gives you hints how to take a case right there at the very beginning, the first few pages.
Absolutely. So, not only Kent, but Margaret Tyler and Gibson and other excellent homeopaths of the time.
And his wife. So she also contributed to one of the editions, to the, mm-hmm. I think, the fifth edition. And so let me see if I can remember her. Clara Louise Kent. She also contributed to that. So those are the shows that are coming up. And, of course, we'll be very excited to learn more with you next Thursday at 11.
Great. So I've got to go. And you're a minute, 2 minutes from your next one.
That's right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brock and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time!